south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. All right, let's get started with an email from a PhD educator up in the States, who's also a radio and TV host and a writer, too, not to mention an ESPN commentator. Talk about multitasking, huh? Matter of fact, on that subject of male multitasking, I noticed a lot of people who listen to this show and a lot of people who come down to my expat wisdom seminar are what you might call real Renaissance men and women. Now, I know the definition of a Renaissance man, and I ain't one. First of all, a Renaissance man has to have one peculiar quality before any of that Renaissance jargon can be applied to him. And what's that? Well, he or she has to be able to multitask. You know, have about six or seven balls up in the air while driving, talking on the phone, and scratching your ass at the same time. You know what? I ain't that guy. I can drive and maybe do a little scratching at the same time, but that's about it. But you know, I have the other half of that Renaissance man equation down. And what's that? Curiosity, certain accomplishments in the arts and the sciences, along with a healthy dose of fearlessness when trying new things. So far, so good, right? But if you can't multitask, well, you get pretty frustrated. By the way, I never overuse that word Renaissance man, as people go overboard with that word genius. Doesn't that drive you nuts? Oh, and by the way, the word Renaissance man, if you use it in Latin America, no one knows what the hell you're talking about because there just aren't any around down here. At least, I haven't run into one yet. The fact is, the few I've met have been gringos or Europeans. Europeans, by the way, are also classified by Latin Americans as gringos. Go figure, huh? However, I'll never figure out how women activist groups haven't jumped on that Renaissance man term itself. Kind of sexist now, isn't it? I'm referring to up in the first world, of course. So then, why aren't there so-called Renaissance women? Have you ever heard that term before? I haven't. Not that they're not out there. I'm just saying, you know, Renaissance woman? Come on, where's Big Bad Oprah when you need her, huh? Oops, I shouldn't have said that because I can't stomach her. And no, to me, she's no Renaissance woman at all. To me, she's just a large, big-mouthed, lucky woman who has enough money to buy a couple of countries. Anyway, here's an email from a real Renaissance PhD educator up in the States who's got a real interesting education story. He starts by saying, "Great show, John. Felt like you were talking to me personally, the one about creativity, comedy, and the neglected advice you give to Latins about education. The fact is," he says, "my favorite student in 30 years of education grew up with a single parent in Mexicali. He came to the States on a football scholarship, learned English, studied with me and got a BA and master's, and then a PhD and was valedictorian, and then ran into the horror of U.S. higher education with its politically correct but venial self-serving politics, and after 6 years, he resigned. And boy, did it take a lot of guts for him to do that. Of course, throughout our association, I knew the academic culture and hoped and prayed he would alight in a place where he could thrive. But alas, he didn't. To this day, I feel angry and very despairing over this. This kid had the heart of a matador and was emasculated by a delusional structure and people less noble who had little character." Of course, he's talking about the U.S. educational system there. Then he goes on to say, "In any case, your show reinforced in my mind how hard the decision to resign must have been given the expectations of his extended Latin family. He was the beacon in that family, but the system let him down. Anyway, you packed a lot of great stuff on a lot of levels in that last show, Johnny. I really appreciate it. And what you do on your show is truly like Howard Cosell's cliche, tell it like it is, for people about to go down there. It's helped me a lot in terms of my going to Nicaragua and other countries with more realistic expectations and knowledge about how they perceived our world. You've got some priceless stuff there. Keep doing it and hit them at every level. All the best. Doc." We'll call him Doc X. Well, thanks for that, Doc. Always trying to hit those home runs, right? It's not easy. And by the way, I mentioned Renaissance men and Renaissance women. And of course, the word genius, which I personally only use with great sarcasm. These days, anyway. You know, like when I see someone on a motorcycle down here in Latin America driving down the road with two flat tires. Now, to me, that's genius. How does he balance that rusted piece of junk? You know, 20-something years ago, when I was deciding to come down to Latin America for good, actually, I hadn't exactly decided on Latin America. I didn't speak Spanish, but I decided to go around the world for a year and see which countries I liked best. I did want to get the hell out of the U.S. Even back then, it was a very strange thing to bring up in front of mixed company. And believe me, when people ask me why, there's a thousand reasons. A thousand little straws on the camel's back, along with a dozen or so very big logs. And I'll tell you, one of those tiny little reasons, it's that massive overuse of the word genius. Now, I know it sounds like a petty thing, but every single time I'd go over to my sister's houses and meet the nephews all over again for Thanksgiving or whatever, it seems like I'd get a report on every cute little thing those kids did in the last week, down to the stunning ways in which they drooled and crapped and finger-painted. That made them, of course, to their obsessed parents, outstanding, gifted little geniuses. Now, I know, a little thing like that might be somewhat aggravating, but it shouldn't drive you to leave the country, and it wasn't. Like I said, it's just the torture of a thousand cuts along with a couple of big knocks. That said, here's what I've noticed on that issue in Latin America. When you're talking about the lower middle classes and the middle classes, which make up about 85 to 90% of the entire Latin population, you just never hear parents going on and on about their brilliant genius kids. And you know, even in the upper middle and wealthy classes in Latin America, parents don't brag about their kids like that. Not, at least, until you bother to ask them first how the kids are doing. And then you only get the very abbreviated version. They're not cataloging and archiving and photoshopping, tweeting, and of course, my favorite, Facebooking, every little moment of their kid's life. Come on, do you think anybody but grandma is actually interested in your kid's sixth grade art project? But I suppose maybe with that first world lag time effect, the advent of It Takes a Village and Every Kid's a Genius just hasn't arrived down here yet. God, I hope it doesn't. But I'll tell you who it has arrived with. Gringos who've come down here and have started families or have brought their own young families down. The fact is, the only time and place I've ever heard parents bragging on their genius kids is when I'm at an event or party and I run into some gringos with kids. Isn't that funny? So know that when you come down here to Latin America, you will not see kids pampered and spoiled by their parents and nannies. Now, I did say nannies there, so you'd think if you have a nanny living 24/7 in your house, a cleaning lady slash nanny usually, the kid or kids in the family, by the very nature of the fact that their every little needs being catered to 24/7 by that maid at least, you'd think these kids would grow up to be intolerable Paris Hilton or Kim Kardashian types. But you just don't see that. Now, of course, I do have a few long-term gringo friends who teach at those so-called expensive private helicopter schools. And more than one of them has told me the kids are so pampered and spoiled that they just like to slap them sometimes, along with their parents. But they do admit it's not the kids' fault. It's the parents and the maids and the bodyguards and the two or three trips a year to Disneyland in Miami to go shopping. You know the type. Well, maybe you don't. We call them down here extreme gringo wannabes. So do note that if you do have kids down here or bring your young kids down, those are the kids they're going to be going to school with and hanging with. Because, you know, at first glance, you're going to want to send them to one of those helicopter schools because it's really so damn cheap and a third of the teachers are from the States. But believe me, after seeing those kids at those schools and talking to some of my gringo teacher friends, it makes a real great case for homeschooling. What? Homeschooling, you say? Who's got time for that? Well, you do, gringo and gringa, because when you come down here, you're going to have a lot of time on your hands. Why not use that to homeschool your kids? Good idea, huh? Because let's face it, if you're smart enough to get it all together to come on down here yourself, you know what's happening up in the States, you know how things are falling apart, and you're tuned in to you and your family surviving in style come what may, obviously you're the perfect kind of parent then for homeschooling, aren't you? So anyway, I'm not saying that every gringo family down here spoils the hell out of their kids and thinks they're walking little geniuses. All I'm saying is that's the only place I've ever encountered that kind of mentality. That's something, thank Buddha, that Latins just have not picked up on yet. Oh, but there is one caveat, and it's a big one. You see, The oldest boy in any Latin family is the absolute king and prince of the palace. But that has nothing to do with gringos or the first world. In fact, it's kind of reversed. It seems that all that prince, first boy, child in the house stuff started with the Spanish colonials, well before Columbus even got here. And funny enough, it's so entrenched down here in all classes that no one even seems to notice. That's the way things are. Family business as usual. And you know, I found the only person in the world that's capable of breaking that legacy of that first boy, child, prince, king of the realm thing is, guess who? An American gringo woman, yeah. She comes down here and hooks up with a Latin guy. She finds out, soon enough, he's the prince of the palace. Well, early on in the relationship, most gringas think it's cute at first. But when she sees the extent of it, when she sees his family thinks his feces is not odoriferous, that's when the battles begin. And normally, she'll only put up with that crap for so long because she's not going to pick up after the guy like a maid. And she's not going to let him disappear every other night with the boys wherever they go, to the bars, playing golf, to the strip clubs, etc., etc. First world American ladies are not going to put up with that kind of crap, not the ones that I know anyway. And here's something that's kind of funny. Did you know that every upscale and wealthy Latin woman believes that guys go to those strip clubs because that's the traditional place for lawyers and accountants and executive types to get together, have a few drinks, and do business? And here's how it goes when one of these Latin business types gets caught red-handed in one of those strip clubs. You know, someone spots his car or sees him walking in and reports back to the wife. He uses the same excuse, and it works. He says, my lawyer or my accountant or whoever called a business meeting with some people from out of town, and the out-of-towners insisted that it be at a strip club. And you have to go with the flow because that's how high rollers do business down here. At strip clubs, it's common. That's what Latins will tell their wives when caught in a bind like that. And when caught in a bind, Latins will often blame gringos for that. They'll say, gringos do it all the time. Have a look at those gringo cable TV programs every night. You see all kinds of executive types going to strip clubs. And so, therefore, I just had to go. I couldn't nix the deal. And you know what? The guy's wife falls for that every time. Boy, these macho guys have these Latin women trained, don't they? Now, that's not to say up in the first world, there isn't some real business, not funny business, going on in the strip clubs, too. So these guys with that claim gringos do it are half right. However, like one gringo told me, going to certain high-end or well-known strip clubs in the States and California and such to do real business, not the business of hanky-panky, is kind of common and not that big a deal. But remember, up in the States, most strip clubs are strictly strip clubs. Up there, with the exception of in and around Vegas, there's no touchy-feely stuff allowed. It's against the law and against the rules of the club. Whereas you see down here in Latin America, every single strip club is a hooker joint. There just is no distinction between a stripper-only club and a so-called House of the Rising Sun. They're one and the same. Mostly legal, too. However, one thing you'll notice, in every medium and large-sized Latin American city, there'll be an area where they have a lot of these strip clubs, and at night those places are buzzing. There's cars everywhere and bodyguards and government cars, as you would expect. But oddly enough, in the daytime, these places look quite deserted. However, every once in a while when you're driving by these areas in the daytime, you'll see one or maybe even two of these places on the strip that have been closed down and taped off quite liberally with police evidence tape. You know that yellow tape? Why do you think that is? Because of drug deals going on in there or something else quite illegal? Go ahead and guess. Time's up. Turns out these places get closed down and blocked off with evidence tape because you see, every so often there'll be a shootout and someone will get killed. Even in high-end clubs that have imported girls from places like South Korea, even Russia. Oh, and by the way, I doubt these ladies traveled 3,000 miles or so to come to Latin America to become strippers and hookers, all for the pleasure of fat, smelly, mannerless, disgusting politicians and narcos. How it happens is that there are actually strip club franchises throughout Latin America, and they have middlemen that put ads in Russian and Korean newspapers as well as the internet. And these young ladies answer want ads in their home country for theater jobs and dance jobs and tourism jobs, etc. And when they get to Latin America,
The so-called company rep meets them at the airport with their visas, and then they become, well, let's say temporary property until they work off their debt. That is, airline tickets, visas, expenses, etc. But back to that question, why the occasional shootout in a strip club? Well, that's because strip clubs are the melting pot or mixing bowl for the biggest pretentious jerks in any Latin city. And of course, it's a regular night out for most married guys, too. Anyway, in the mix, you always have your pretentious asswipe politicians, and most of those guys own these clubs on the side, so why wouldn't they go and take their friends? It's on the house, right? Then, combine that with the wealthy cowboy landowners that come in for the weekend in their studded-out pickup trucks and bodyguards, often with 10-gallon hats, too. They're all pumped up that they're in the big city on the weekend. And don't forget your up-and-coming narcos. They'll pull up with not one, but two bulletproof SUVs, the second car filled with rumpled bodyguards, packing big heat. Now note, all these type of guys, totally testosteroned out, trying to out-macho each other with their money and their bodyguards and their perceived power. Now, I ask you, with a mix like that and everybody packing, don't you think people are going to get shot once in a while? Especially if you got two politicians from opposing parties in the same place, because down here, in politics, these guys play for keeps. So why do politicians kill each other? Why not? Once you're in, elected to anything, you're on the gravy train, big time. It's not only the politician sucking off the public trough, but his friends and family are sucking off it too. So once elected, you better stay elected or all your friends and family will lose their jobs to the next guy's family. And note, the pay is two or three times what the average person gets in about a tenth of the work. Which is why most of the year, not even election time, a lot of these eligible contenders get bumped off. And not just at strip clubs either. The fact is, a week doesn't go by when you read one of the big Latin papers down here, you don't see a politician getting bumped off. From mayors to senators to city councilmen, they all get shot at. Which, you gotta admit, it's a little harsh, but in the end, all of us long-term expats agree it's a good start. Who knows, maybe if we're lucky, it'll be a future trend up in the first world. So now with that upbeat news, let's change gears a bit. This time, let's go to Little Uruguay. This comes from the president, Jose Mujica. Now, people in the know realize that he's probably the only president of any country in the world who's actually got a heart of gold and deserves the job. Now, you know, a long time ago I mentioned on the show that he's the guy that drives around in an old Volkswagen without any bodyguards at all, and his wife rides a motor scooter to work every day. He's a vegetarian and an atheist, so what's not to like about the guy? And get this, he donates at least half of his salary back to Uruguay. But all is not well in paradise. Because of his socialist tendency, government in Uruguay is massive. So he's a good, humble, honest guy with a good heart. Unfortunately, about a quarter to a third of the people are working for the government or are involved in contracts for the government. So I don't recommend the place at all. However, a lot of people are going down there. And they do find it nice and laid back and expensive. First world expensive now. That's what you get when you have so many lard asses working for government that have to be supported by tax dollars. Now, if you remember, Uruguay is the only country in Latin America that has legalized marijuana. Taxing it is quite a wise idea after all. Which leads to why, directly or indirectly, Jose Mujica is in the news so often. Like this time. And by the way, for those of you who speak a little Spanish, Mujica is not muñeca. I know. Mujica sounds an awful lot like muñeca. Now, the word muñeca is the word for doll in Spanish. So when you say a girl's a muñeca, she's a doll. Of which Uruguay's president is definitely not. And also, it's the same word they use for wrist. Now, don't ask me why. But if you, for example, sprain your wrist in Latin America, you've sprained your muñeca. Go figure, huh? But we're talking about the other Mujica, the president of Uruguay. Now, you'd think a very humble, principled guy like that who drives an old Volkswagen and helped get that marijuana legalization legislation through, a guy like that wouldn't bow to anyone and would never be politically correct. Well, here's what happened down in Uruguay on the 24th of November. President Mujica said on the record that in the case of those 43 missing/dead students that disappeared in Mexico, you know that story. With all the cops and the politicians and the drug cartels up there in bed together, Muñeca went on record and said the incident was the last straw for Mexico, and now it qualified totally as a failed state. And of course, that's why Muñeca pushed so hard to get that marijuana legislation through. He didn't want his country to turn into a narco state. Why? Of course, because narcos make no money in places drugs are legal. Now, he not only said that Mexico was a failed state on the record, he also said that it was a worm-infested den of corruption. Now, it didn't take 2 hours for that news to reach the halls of injustice up in Mexico, meaning the executive branch in Mexican government is truly pissed off at what he said. So when big bad Mexico, that's got about 35 times the population of Uruguay, gets pissed, things happen fast. And by the way, Mexico is the number one trading partner for nearly every country in Latin America. So, if they want, they have the power to damage smaller Latin countries like Uruguay in the wallet. So anyway, a few hours later, when Mexico's diplomatic hammer came down, Muñeca got up, made another statement, this time on the official presidential webpage. He took the whole thing back. He said, nope, sorry about that. Mexico really isn't a failed state. So, in pussyfooting around, he sucked up to the Mexican diplomatic corps, and now all's been smoothed over, kinda. So then, is Mexico a failed state? Of course it is. Are there other failed states in Latin America? Plenty of them, but Mexico's beyond redemption and the case that beats all. The other failed states throughout Latin America, well, you might call them stable failed states, because when you live with them, you realize what you do doesn't matter to anyone as long as you're not committing a crime. Basically, we have a tremendous amount of freedom. The government's just concerned with its own graft and its own corruption. It doesn't bother you if you don't bother it. It's kind of like having a skunk living next door. You don't bother it, it doesn't bother you. I take that back. It's like having a skunk dipped in shit living next door. By the way, that's another gem I stole from expat Eddie. But I digress. There's still more news on the Uruguay front. It turns out 60% of all the tourism into Uruguay is from Argentina. And now that Argentina's in the crapper again and defaulting, not to mention they've slapped currency controls on the dollar, well, wouldn't you know it? Tourism in Uruguay is down 10% from last year. So basically, the Uruguay government is panicking about that. So what they've done is they've spent $4.5 million in an international television publicity campaign that speaks of Uruguay's marvels, whatever they are. Now, as it turns out, this is really big money for a country of only about 3 million or so. They've never had a big publicity campaign like that before. Of course, it's aimed at Argentinos, but they know Argentina's crashing and burning, so they're spending half that money in ads in Brazil, in Portuguese, of course. Now, when you interview Argentinos about this, they say the reason why they're not traveling to Uruguay like they used to is because it's gotten so expensive. Of course, they're having real difficulty in obtaining dollars. So what they're saying basically is they get a really terrible exchange rate when they use Argentine pesos versus the US dollar. Argentina is in technical default, so no one wants their peso anymore. More on Argentina in an upcoming show, so stay tuned. Now, I'd like to switch gears just for a second and tell you about something you're going to see down here in Latin America that you never see up in the States. I know, there's a million things that are different down here, and I've spoken about half of them, but here's another one. Don't be surprised when you walk into a little tienda, or you walk into a coffee shop, or a department store, or a gas station, or whatever. When you buy something there, they just won't have the change. Duh. First rule you learn when opening a business, right? Double duh. And many times what they'll do is they'll take your money and say, wait just a minute, and they'll run across the street or next door and come back in 5 minutes with your change. I mentioned this on a past show a long time ago. And I also mentioned that they'll often leave you alone in the store for that 5 minutes because there's only one person working in a small tienda. That's how friendly and trusting the people down here are. Off the gringo tourist trail, that is. You won't see it much in Costa Rica, for example. But what I didn't tell you is this. Oftentimes, when you need change and they don't have it, the teller or the cashier will pull out his own wallet or her own purse and proceed to give you your remaining change out of their own dough. And of course, at the end of the day, when the numbers are counted in the tills, they get that money back. But imagine that happening at a Shell station or Starbucks up north. Fat chance, right? Oh, and be prepared if it's a lady teller or cajera, cash register person, A good percentage of the time, especially when you're talking about a small pharmacy or a variety store. Often, especially in a mom-and-pop shop, there are few people in line, so the cashier could be on the phone with her boyfriend or girlfriend. And nope, down here in Latin America, there's no shame to that or embarrassment at all. They'll just do the transaction with you, give you a receipt, etc., etc., while gabbing away on the phone. Now, it used to be a few years back, you'd see these people working in these department stores, etc., using the company phone, you know, the one with the wire connected to the handset in the box, for all you guys who haven't seen those kind of phones lately. So it used to be, whenever they could, employees would sneak in phone calls whenever the boss was out, or sneaking in a personal phone call of his own. In fact, that used to be quite the perk when the boss wasn't around or sleeping in the back room or whatever. But these days, stealing time on the boss's phone is no longer a big issue because all the Latin American telephone companies, that would be Movistar, Claro, Tigo, etc., have now instituted very cheap family and friends plans, even with those $15 throwaway phones. And here's how it works. You'll get a text message saying that they're offering you a friends and family plan, and you send a message back, and it costs you maybe $6 a month to have unlimited phone calls with one, two, or three friends, depending on the phone service. So you sign up via text message and you put in those numbers of the friends you want. And from then on, well, you just talk your ass off. And believe me, these plans have caused a virtual revolution among the lower middle class and middle class populations down here in Latin America. Just walk down the street and you'll see people are absolutely glued to their little telephones. So do be prepared. Everywhere you go, every kiosk on the street, all the little department stores and hot dog stands, you're bound to be waited on by people who are still engaged with the phone. And you know, as it turns out down here, the boss often doesn't give a damn because as long as they're not using the company phone, well, it's okay with him. Which is why when I was walking through an upscale mall the other day, I just had to take a picture of the help wanted sign on the glass front door. It said, "Help wanted. Hardworking, industrious salesperson. No cell phones allowed." Yep, I did take a photo of that, and it will show up in the PowerPoint of my next Expat Wisdom Seminar. Speaking of that, when this show goes out, we'll be about a month away from liftoff on that January 2015 seminar in Central America. If you're interested in signing up, we have some spots available, so just go to www.expatwisdom.com, click on the seminar link at the top of the page, and check it out. If you haven't got a plan B or just now thinking about it, you won't want to miss this.
South of the border, down Mexico.
You've been listening to the Expat Files, living in Latin America, coming to you twice a week from somewhere south of the border. Email me, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And don't forget to check out expatwisdom.com to sign up for your free reports on Latin America. See you next time. Nos vemos. She was a picture. He knows.